Next, it's my pleasure to introduce Commissioner Michael Dunn as Commissioner of the Commodities Futures Trading Corporation since 2004. He's also served as chairman and designated federal official of the Commission's Agriculture Advisory Committee that was created to advise the Commission on agricultural issues surrounding trading of commodity futures and options. Prior to joining the CFTC, Commissioner Dunn served at USDA in several capacities as Director of the Office of Policy and Analysis at the Farm Credit Administration, as Undersecretary of Agriculture for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, as Acting Undersecretary for Rural Economic and Community Development, Administrator of Farm Home Administration. Mr. Dunn also has long involvement in agricultural credit, serving as a Midwest Area Director for the FMHA, a loan officer and a Vice President of the Farm Credit Banks, and a member of the professional staff at the Senate Ag Committee specializing in agricultural credit. He's a native of Keokuk, Iowa. He's very happy about the Orange Bowl. Don't brag to people from Georgia. He received his BA and MA degree from the University of New Mexico. We're very pleased to have him here.
Well, thank you very much, George. And perhaps the person, certainly on this panel, but in the room that knows the least about cotton production, cotton industry, is the guy speaking right now. So you've been forewarned. Let me introduce somebody that's with me here, a longtime associate who works with me in my office, Bob Cashdollar. Bob, if you'll stand up there, wave. Don't get uncomfortable. The last time Bob and I were together here in New Orleans was in 1988 for a Rural Electric Administration meeting, and it snowed. So this cold weather you got here, is Bob and I are at fault for that. Let me give you a little background on the commission. The CFTC's mission is to protect the market users and public from fraud, manipulation, and abusive practices related to the sales of commodities and financial futures and options, and to foster an open, competitive, and financially sound futures and options market. And that mission is, keep that in mind when I start talking about what happened in March of 08, because there are folks that said, well, there had to be some type of manipulation that resulted in this. The organization, Gary Gensler is the chairman of the CFTC. I am the oldest member, I guess, in age and longevity on the commission as well now. I've been a commissioner since December of 2004. I am chair of the Agricultural Advisory Committee. Jill Summers is the chair of the Global Marketing Advisory Committee, or GMAC. Bart Chilton is the chairman of the Energy and Environmental Marketing Advisory Committee. And our newest member, who just came on board this year, or last year, is Scott O'Malley. And Scott's got a great background in energy. He had worked for Senator Domenici on his staff in the Senate. And we all bring different backgrounds with us, but that's what makes up a great board. We are appointed by the President with approval of the Senate, and we are independent. We are not part of the administration per se. We're like the Securities Exchange Commission or the FTC. We're answerable to ourselves and to the public. Terry said he didn't want to clutter up his chart. Well, let me clutter it up for you. And this chart, many times I say this is the three H's. Folks look at it and they say, what the heck's going on there? Who the heck's in charge and what the heck are they doing? And I usually don't use heck. But this shows two periods. This is the March of 08, and here we are. This comes up to December of this year. This green is the cotton prices. The others, and as Terry had mentioned, here's the your corn and wheat, soybean. You can see what's happening in those in relation to the wheat prices, just as he had pointed it out. But obviously, something happened in this period in here. And what was it? What took place? Here I've simplified it, and I've got just the cotton prices so you can see it. Let me talk about this period right in here first, and then I'm going to come back and talk about the other period in here. Here's what we saw for the period in late February to 2008. USDA Outlook Forum indicated that there was a reduction in the amount of acreage planted in cotton. National Cotton Council annual survey of cotton producers' intentions to plant cotton indicated cotton acreage would decline 12%. Oversupply of cotton considered adequate then, but with a likely smaller crop, the supply would likely tighten. Active buying of cotton by China. Commodity Research Bureau index reached record high. Record corn prices, record soybean prices, crude oil over $100 a barrel, record gold prices, high silver prices, open outcry in cotton futures ended in the pits on February 29th, was the last day of session. First fully electronic futures trading session took place on March 3rd. The dollar index contract at lowest level since the index was started in 1973, and overshadowing all of this in March of 2008 was the beginning of the collapse of Bear Stearns. So we began seeing a lot of upheaval going on in not only the futures and options market, but the capital markets as well. Let me go back then and talk about where we are now. And I'm not going to dwell on this because Terry just did it much better than I can do it. But to a large extent, as we look at those prices climbing up towards the end of last year, the fundamentals say to me, that's understandable. It did not say that to me in March of 2008. Quite frankly, it was the other way around. Well, we asked the staff, the CFTC, first of all, we asked the Division of Enforcement, was there any, remember what our mission was to ensure there wasn't any fraud or manipulation. We asked them to go back and see, was there any fraud or manipulation that took place at that time? And this is what the Division of Enforcement's findings were. After analyzing the futures trading activities in the critical time period and throughout the 3 days, enforcement did not detect any unusual or suspicious trading patterns by any market participant that would suggest that they sought to or had the ability to manipulate the price of cotton futures upwards. They found that the data shows that 8 of the 10 largest longs were inactive during the critical time period. In addition, traders' activities in the futures and options market prior to the futures contract price reaching limit up were generally cotton merchants who held significant net short position and whose activity appeared to be consistent with reducing short positions to limit potential margin calls. Other traders identified in the analysis either also held short positions, traded insignificant volumes overall, traded in a manner that was indicative of scalping, or were basically flat, meaning that they had little motive to manipulate the price of cotton futures. And accordingly, the analysis of the trading activities March 3rd through the 5th did not uncover evidence that any market participants with long future positions engaged in trading activities to manipulate the price of cotton futures to benefit its long futures position or in options or OTC position. Well, if there wasn't any intentional manipulation, something still happened. So we asked the rest of the other divisions at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, our Economist Office, the Division of Market Oversight, to come in and take a look and tell us what did happen. What did they see as going on? Well, I'm going backwards instead of forwards, I think. Here's what the factors that they found. Trading patterns of market participants, or this is the factors that they looked at. The trading patterns of market participants, the broad increase of other commodity prices, the impact of the presence of certain market participants, the impact of possible tightening of credit, the impact of price limits in general, and the potential that prices had been manipulated. Market participant positions. Here are the two biggies that we had in there. Index traders generally held steady with long position. Cotton merchants generally had short positions and faced margin calls. The study found that large positions were held by index traders and cotton merchants. Generally, the index traders did not alter their trading strategies during the week, which is typical of this class of traders. The data also shows that the long open interest held by the index traders was not so much larger that weeks in comparable time periods in the past. Cotton merchants, which generally held short positions, increased those short positions significantly around mid-February and sought to reduce those positions as prices increased during the week of March 3rd. Cotton merchants holding short open interest, sometimes exceeding 66% of the short open interest in the May 2008 contract, were generally the same level as comparable periods in most other years. These merchants stated that they were uneasy about the situation over the preceding weekend, fearing that continued price increase would result in significant margin calls. They wanted to reduce the short positions to levels where their financing could cover the margin calls or to increase their line of credit to finance margin calls. Findings of the report included that trading of the largest longs were not consistent with activities that would cause an increase in the price of cotton futures or options, that many market participants active in the futures and options markets before futures price reached limit up were cotton merchants. During critical time periods before future prices reached limit up, no participant in the options market established a significant long position or sold a significant existing options position. And the merchant with long short positions were hedged, holding sufficient physical cotton to deliver against their contracts. There was no shortage of physical cotton, and certified stocks were rising. By early morning of March 3rd, a substantial number of the merchants attempted to reduce their short positions by buying cotton futures electronically on ICE US once the electronic trading began at 1:30 a.m. The impact of this rush to cover the future increase in the price of cotton futures contracts, particularly the May 2008 contract, resulted in the limit-up price being reached by 4:33 a.m. And the market locked limit-up for the day at 6:48 a.m. At this point, merchants had to wait several hours until the cotton option pit opened at 10:30 to try to offset losses. Here's an important piece now. ICE Clear US, consistent with their rules at the time and anticipated by some participants, used the options price or the synthetic future price to, as the basis for the mark to market calculation for future positions. As a result, merchants that were required to meet significant midday and end of the day margin calls. The merchants with short positions had to scramble to cover their exposure and limit losses. One, ICE Clearing U.S. was calling for higher margins. Two, other traders were holding out for higher bids due to the increased exposure and uncertain access to local markets. And three, the risk and volatility discouraged new entrants into the marketplace. And keep in mind, this was also the first day of electronic trading only, so we didn't have those pit traders in there that understood, that had the opportunity to go in and say, I can make some money on this. Generally, the smaller number of banks who customarily service cotton merchants tended naturally to become more nervous. Now, as an old PCA loan officer, I understand that. This was complicated by the fact that the value of stored cotton, which was a large part of the collateral used by the merchants for financing, did not raise proportionately with the futures, creating another squeeze on credit availability. It appears that a number of cotton merchants holding significant short futures positions and concerned about their lines of credit to maintain those positions desired to offset at least a portion of their positions. In some cases, these merchants established long positions in the options market, i.e. the synthetic futures position, and created an economically offsetting position, essentially protecting against further losses. In other cases, merchants were able to offset futures positions prior to hitting that limit. And finally, others held their futures position and posted additional margins. While each of these strategies represented a different approach to dealing with short positions that had accumulated large losses, there are significant differences between them. Number one, in the case of the merchant who had either offset their future position directly or through a synthetic futures price, they essentially locked in any losses that they had accrued for the position. In addition, by closing out or neutralizing their position, they had essentially lifted the hedge against their cash market positions. So it was the worst of both worlds for them. In the case of the merchant who posted additional margins, those trading continued to face the risk of rising market prices, but maintained their hedge against falling prices. It's not clear that hitting the price limit or the combination of hitting the price limit and using the implied futures price to set margins created additional hardships or losses that otherwise could have been avoided given the state of the market at the time. Had the limit not been in effect, traders seeking to buy futures would have had to pay a higher price than the limit price of March 3rd. Moreover, a closing out positions would have locked in the losses, which permanently would have reduced the trader's capital and could have been posted as margin. Therefore, it's not clear that reducing the positions would allow a party's financing to cover additional losses. It would only have the effect of eliminating exposure to future additional losses. The staff found that overall, there was no evidence that the existence of price limits coupled with the use of the implied futures price to calculate mark-to-market resulted in an improper market price being used to calculate the mark-to-market. Certainly, from the perspective of the trader holding the losing short position, the use of a settlement price above the limit price worked against their immediate financial interest. However, from the perspective of the clearinghouse and the financial integrity of the market, there would have been an additional risk to default taken on the limit price, which was obviously not the true market price, if it was substituted for a clearly identifiable market price that was above the limit price. In the weeks following the market events of March 3rd, ICE US stopped calculating the mark-to-market using synthetic prices. On June 11th, 2008, ICE US made a rule amendment that removes the requirement that synthetic prices be used to calculate the mark-to-market when future prices are locked limit up or limit down. They also developed a rule amendment that expanded the daily price limits applicable to cotton futures that apply to the same price limit to cotton. However, according to ICUS, the cotton options rule will become effective on a business date when the applicable technological systems are available to accommodate option price limits. To date, ICUS has not implemented the amendment, so the options are still not subject to price limits. Staff, as I told you, made three recommendations. Let me go back one here, because this is really the final findings of the report. The report found that, in large measure, the volatile price moves experienced in late February and early March 2008 in the cotton market reflected a multitude of changing expectations regarding fundamentals and economic factors. The commodity futures markets are anticipatory by nature. Changes in these expectations will result in changes in future prices. When traders expect a greater probability of the occurrence of an event that would increase or decrease the demand for the commodity in the future, that factor will be reflected in the form of higher or lower future prices now. The three recommendations, and this editorial on my part, anything I say here is Mike Dunn's opinion and not that of the commission. I think these recommendations are kind of anticlimactic and really don't justify what needs to be done in the future. But the three staff recommendations that ICUS analyze in light of the historic price volatility, the expected frequency with which the current price limits will restrict trading, two, that ICUS evaluate whether in conditions of rapidly rising prices and extreme price volatility, the newly expanded price limits will allow the cotton market to operate efficiently and facilitate the price discovery and risk management functions. And three, that ICUS notifies the commission of whether it intends to implement the dormant rule that they had on subjecting cotton options to price limits. And if so, ICUS should provide the commission with an update on the status of the technology upgrades needed to implement the dormant rule. As I said, I find that rather shallow and vague. But it wasn't the intent of the staff at the time to come up with where do we go from here. It was an intent of the staff to try to figure out where are we or what happened at that time. I want to say that the reason this report came out yesterday is because of Gary Raines. He invited me to come down here and speak today, and I told the staff I wasn't coming unless this report was out. So, Gary, we thank you for putting the pressure on the CFTC. Now, it really comes to what do we do with this? We're telling you what we think happened at that time, but where do we go from here? In my opinion, the real reasons to have a future market are two. Price discovery and risk mitigation. In my opinion, in March of 2008, the future market did neither of these things. That was a failure, and it's not a failure that is acceptable. I've asked producers in all the commodities whether they experienced a input in their income because of that price peak in March. I have never yet met one cotton producer that said they did. So my challenge really is to you, where do we go from here? What changes have to be made in the contract? As I told you at the beginning of this speech, the guy that knows the least about the industry is talking right now. So it's really incumbent upon you, the industry, to give us suggestions of where do we go, how do we fix this? How do we assure that this doesn't happen in the future? And to kind of start things off on Q&A, I'd ask my fellow panel members if they would have some observations or suggestions. And if you guys want to come up.
Thank you.
Panel style. And let me see if I can. I'd have to hold that. That's probably going to work better than I'm going to do an Inspector Clouseau thing here if I monkey with that.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Dunn. For the opportunity to respond. It's an honor to have you here. Just to say that, like most of you, I read the report yesterday. I'm satisfied, based on the report, that staff has CFTC has completed due diligence and that there was not market manipulation. They seem to have evaluated all of the possibilities and considered the trades, literally trade by trade, minute by minute, during the suspect time period, and have ruled out the possibility of manipulation. I say that regarding recommendations to go forward, any effort to suppress volatility by limiting trading will inevitably result in evasive activity. Again, many of the recommendations that are thrown around or that are suggested by people are to limit certain categories of traders or to reduce the volume of trading and volume of positions that different people can have or different categories of people can have. Any efforts to suppress trading in that way simply results in evasive behavior of people setting up multiple entities to avoid whatever position limits are put in place. Say two recommendations that I have. First of all, it's my impression that the injury that occurred to the cotton industry was caused by panic, and that the CFTC could assist the injury, assist the industry in avoiding future injury by ensuring that there's more time to respond to market prices, by requiring ICE to implement the daily trading limits in options as well as the daily trading limits in futures. Daily trading limits buy time for people to evaluate the information that's available. And so trading limits do have value in just spreading out the time that people have to respond to new information. The other thing I would recommend is that CFTC can improve transparency. Transparency has improved in recent years. Transparency of trading has improved in recent years. But today, the reports from yesterday's trading, who traded, what categories, what volumes they traded, won't be available until Friday of this week. With technology, I would hope the CFTC can move that up to a daily basis so that every day when the market closes within an hour or two, the market can know the information, perhaps not the individual identities, but the identities by categories of major trading, major traders, whether they're long, they're short, and all that sort of thing. Again, the injury from the volatility stemmed from panic, and much of the panic stemmed from both the compressed time period in which people had to respond. They woke up in the morning, and already the market was limit up, and they didn't have time to call their bankers, and they were faced with this chaotic situation. So buying time and providing more information so they can evaluate better what's going on are things that CFTC could do to reduce or mitigate the injury that might occur from future incidences of volatility in the market. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to give a few reactions, I think oftentimes when I think of this particular situation, I think of the movie A Perfect Storm, and sometimes we have these events where there's several things that come together at one time to create a unique and unusual situation. And I think the recommendations that we just heard from are positive ones. I think to step back just a moment, I would add this, is that we really do need to recognize that in the world where we're at today, strategies that can be developed, off exchange instruments that can, and strategies that can be developed, somehow come back and affect what's going on the exchange. The idea of transparency, I strongly concur with that, is that it seems to me that that's the role of CFTC, is to make sure that we have timely and accurate information and the reporting of information so that all the players on the exchange can be fully informed. I think the other thing is that we have to recognize that CFTC has limits on what it can do. The exchanges have to monitor themselves to a certain degree and put the right mechanisms in place as well. CFTC is not going to be able to do it all. I will make one final comment in terms of these after-the-fact forensic exercises in events like this. As an economist, I just want to point out, because this is a common difficulty, is that we can go back and look at an event like this, and in many instances, the power of our techniques, the statistical approaches that we take, is not as powerful as we would like for it to be. And just because we look at something doesn't mean that it didn't occur, it's just that we can't prove it. And I think in a lot of instances like this, that's the dilemma we're in. I'm not saying something did or did not occur, but our ability to ferret out what has occurred is oftentimes not that great. And so when you look at these things, you can do the best investigation that you possibly can, and at the end of the day, you're going to make the best guess that you can. And that's the reality of trying to analyze some of these things. But the quality of the data that is being collected is going to, in many cases, be fundamental to the quality of the of the review that we do when one of these events occurs. Thank you.
Do you want to respond to those first before we go to general questions?
Well, first of all, let me thank my colleagues here on the panel, because I really put them on the spot. The report didn't come out till yesterday, and I asked them this morning to be responders on it, and I think they did a very good job for this quick overview with my poor presentation of what was in the the report, although I must admit they both downloaded those and read the report already, so they did have a little better heads up than you that are just getting a cold from me this morning. And I do appreciate that, Keith, when you talk about those off-exchange instruments, OTCs, do you think that the commission should have authority over those and be able to report on those as well?
I think there's always the potential that those instruments, I think it's a very complicated issue, but I think that there is the potential out there for off-exchange instruments to mimic and create a situation where I can create a problem for the exchange with an off-exchange instrument. I think that is a very broad issue. It's not just a cotton issue. I think that is the real policy debate that we've got at this time in terms of this industry. And you could go to some extremes that would limit creativity in the industry to develop new and better products. But I think, again, requiring transparency at the very least of some of these things is necessary.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I apologize for omitting that. differentiate between regulation of OTC and registration of over-the-counter trading. Unambiguously, I think all the over-counter markets must be registered so that there can be transparency so that market participants can know what's going on. It doesn't mean trying to suppress trading by limiting it or regulating it, but requiring it to be registered so people know the volume, know the categories of traders, are able to evaluate the potential impacts. That'll be of great benefit in reducing the injury caused by panic when future instances of volatility like this occur.
If you'll hold on to that, Terry, let me follow up on a point that you made, that trying to get this weekly information out on a daily basis, and for you that follow CFTC and the information we put out, last year we expanded our commitment of trader report 2 years ago, and last year we even expanded that expansion, and I'd like to get your comments about that type of information we're putting out. Has it been helpful for you, and what would you like to see further?
A little embarrassed here. I'm not a trader, and so I can't claim that we're using this. But just last night, we were with friends looking at the website and looking at new data that we hadn't been aware of before. So we're aware that there have been improvements in reporting in the last several years, and that continued improvements in both the coverage of the reports and the timeliness of the reports will be of benefit to the industry over the long term. And yeah, the new information is valuable. The stuff we were looking at last night will be incorporated into analysis of markets that we do in the future.
Actually, let's throw things open for the audience to ask some questions of any of our speakers. Anybody?
Commissioner Dunn, during the spike in prices, the open interest was at record levels, I assume. During that period, the delivery mechanism of the exchange did not expand at all. And also during that period, we had a lot of stocks. And I know of cotton traders who wanted to arbitrage. They wanted to move cotton into certificated warehouses. That arbitrage activity would have sold futures and bought cash. That they were severely hampered because there was no room in the certificated warehouses. I'm wondering if my argument is valid. Would it be appropriate for CFTC to recommend that ICE review their delivery mechanism?
I think you have a valid point, and it's one that I've heard from folks that we need new delivery points and we need new certified warehouses. And historically, the CFTC has, and I think this is probably good, has not tried to dictate what those contracts should include or how they should look. I think that it's more important that the industry, the folks that are working day-to-day in concert with the exchange, and you do have a cotton committee at ICE US to bring up these things and look at it. As you're probably all aware, in the last 3 or 4 years, I've been very concerned, and the Commission's been very concerned, on the lack of convergence in the wheat contract. And this is, you know, a one-day example of that, or a one-week example of that. And we have gone through a number of meetings with both the Ag Advisory Committee and the Commission as a whole. We've had a task force working, the Chicago Board of Trade, now the CME Group, was, in my opinion, very forthcoming in working with the producers in the industry in those situations. They came up with some fixes. They didn't think those actually worked so well, so they came back, made another shot at it, and then after we had a hearing at the commission on that final proposal, they even amended it again. So it does say that the exchanges listen to their customers. If there are contract concerns, I think we, and me in particular as the chair of the Ag Advisory Committee, I have a bully pulpit and can say, let's get this fixed. And I'm in fact saying that today. What we've got here is an analysis of postmortem, if you will, what happened. I want to make sure it doesn't happen again in the future. And I don't have any assurances that that's going to take place because there hasn't really been any major change. And so what you're saying is that's one idea that ought to be looked at. And certainly as I will put that on the agenda for the next Ag Advisory Committee meeting.
Okay, and when people ask questions, can you let us know who you are, where you're from, although everybody knows who you are?
I'm Carl Anderson from Texas A&M University. You've done a great job here of analyzing this information, but the one that I have to teach from, you didn't touch. At the conclusion, you said you believe that the commodity market should be used as a price discovery mechanism. The best data I have is spot quotes for West Texas. And at the time between March 3rd and 5th, the basis on cotton was somewhere around 18 to 20 cents. So my question is, how could an owner of cotton deliver within 2 days and avoided this problem with basis risk? I look at basis now. Basis, if you look at basis before March 3rd, or February 29th, it's going to be fairly smooth. You look at it today, you're going to find that that basis has widened substantially in cotton over the time period since March 3. You'll also find that there's strong variation between delivery periods in the market. And this was not the case prior to February 29. So I didn't see any information here. And somehow this was managed very clearly, very well, until March, February 29th. So I would encourage you to look at the rules and regulations that were in place prior to this new system and the new players of speculators in this market. If we're going to have a commodity market that we're going to deliver on, I want to teach it that way. Otherwise, what we're doing is we're encouraging farmers to go to a cash delivery market, and we're going to move completely away from the futures market, just given the time that the industry needs to respond relative, unless you respond strongly and give us encouragement that this won't happen again. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You know, this is why I love to come here. I always learn something, and at this point I get to learn at the feet of the master. So thank you very much for that suggestion. And Bob, I think we need to follow up with Carl on this so that we can make sure that this point is one of the things that we look at in the future as we go forward.
Any other questions?
Yep. I'm Charles Johnson with Farm Journal Magazine. Should there be a restriction on the number of contracts that these hedging in Texas funds can hold?
It's no secret that the commission, we've had a number of hearings on establishment of position limits, and part and parcel of that were the whole field of what exemptions were allowed and what weren't allowed. The commission staff has been working on the development of a proposed regulation to look at spec limits and where we ought to go with them, and including in that is the exemptions in the energy arena. And when we put out a proposed regulation, and again in my presentation I said the futures industry is anticipatory, I'm really very fearful that people look at proposed regulations and say that's what's going to happen. And there are a lot of unintended consequences of people that haven't read those, what the proposal says, what is in it. I feel, and I feel very, very strongly about this, that if we're putting in position limits in the exchanges, those same position limits must be reflected in the over-the-counter market, and more importantly, internationally. Folks, it's globalization. Electronic trading is here, and it's incumbent upon us, in this case, I think the G20, to develop a proposal if that's the way we're going to go. We did see that the EC put out a white paper on what they thought was important on position limits, and some of the countries like France and Germany said, well, yeah, we can go along with that, but the UK says, we don't think that's right. And if we're not all operating on a level playing field, that has consequences. And I can't regulate what I don't have authority to regulate.
Okay, well, our hour is up. Could you join me to thank, actually, Gary Raines, who organized this excellent session, along with our speakers today. Again, I think there's hard copies of Commissioner Dunn's PowerPoint presentation. You can get the report online. Thank you all.